This is Laughs and Littles, a conversation about friendship and faith in the midst of motherhood. Life with littles is better when we do it together. So grab a load of laundry and join us for some laughs.
Take, Lord, and receive all my liberty, my memory, my understanding, and my entire will, all I have and call my own. You have given all to me. To you, Lord, I return it. Everything is yours. Do with it what you will. Give me only your love and your grace. That is enough for me. Amen.
Today, we're going to give an overview of two of the famous farm lady Ina May's books on childbirth and her book on breastfeeding, and a chance for us to catch up before we take a pretty long maternity leave break, because I'm due pretty soon. And then by the time I'm feeling better, Sarah's going to be having her baby. And then, then we'll have all of our kids home all summer. And then we'll so kind of our annual summer break until September. But longer this time.
Wait, okay. So tell me about this breastfeeding book, because I had never heard of it. I didn't know she had a breastfeeding book. And part of me is like, how much can you say about breastfeeding?
So- oh my gosh. Are you kidding me? There is so much. So okay. Ina May's Guide to Breastfeeding is the title of the book. And let's see, a little bio on her. A lot of people have heard of her, but it's if they haven't, it says she's a certified professional midwife and has been a midwife for more than 35 years at the Farm Midwifery Center at the farm in Tennessee. But this line cracks me up. It says nearly 100%. So I'm like, okay, is it 99%? Can we just not say that? Nearly 100% of the women who have given birth and lived in the farm community, which sounds like a cult, many times when you read about the farm.
Anytime hippie word, commune.
Hippie commune, there you go. It's all about the love. Have been able to exclusively breastfeed their babies. Okay, so first of all, yeah, there's so much to say about breastfeeding. I really feel like, yeah, you've breastfed four babies. you're natural. I think, first of all, there's always more to learn about breastfeeding and like childbirth and child rearing. Like, there's always more to learn. And there is like, trust your gut, trust your instinct, do what works for you and your family. But there is like always more to learn. And definitely for me, I breastfed Cecilia for such a short few months and then was done and don't regret that at all. But I was like, I want to, like, it's been years since I breastfed. Like, I want to put forth my best efforts. And I feel like I have had a lot of aha moments of like, oh yeah, I didn't know that. And I started off with some like podcasts about breastfeeding, which all were duds to me. And I was like, I do not want to hear a podcast on breastfeeding. I want to read a book on breastfeeding because I want information. I want like, boom, boom, boom. If you have this problem with your nipples, do this. If you have this problem with your latch, do this. This is how you get a good, like, that is what I want. And I literally downloaded like 5 different podcasts, and they're for people who love talking about breastfeeding all day long, which is not just like, I mean, I'm down to talk about it, just like all day long.
You're more like troubleshooting.
Give me the deets. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they would be like, they would go on and on about how much lack of information there is for women with breastfeeding. And I was like, I am waiting.
Yeah. Provide the information.
Okay. But no, you first talk, because birth comes first. You tell me a little bit about the wait, we've both read that too. It's been a few years for me though. The Ina May's Guide to
Childbirth.
Okay.
Well, full disclosure, I haven't done my reread Review. Of it in this okay. pregnancy yet. So okay. I've just entered the third trimester. I'm 29 weeks and
can I see your belly right now?
My belly?
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a while. Aww. That looks great.
I'm feeling big though. Yeah. Like, I'm like, still 11 weeks to go, man.
Yeah.
I wanted that second trimester high to just last till the end. And I was like, it doesn't. Okay. But the thing I love about the Guide to Childbirth book is all the birth stories you can read through just to, mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. I like surrounding myself with positive birth stories. So
yeah.
just kind of getting story after story of like, it was so calm. It was so peaceful. My partner was here. He did this. The midwives did this. We were in this beautiful setting. Baby was born. It's like next story, you know, just like, immersing myself in those is good prep for me. And then I kind of like do a little skimming browsing of her stuff. And I feel like some of her main points are like the mind body connection and her sphincter law.
Yeah.
And giving just like powerful reminders of like, we are embodied and so much of what we think affects what our body does and how to just like, yeah, bringing in laughter, bringing in things that loosen you up and keeping your jaw loose and relaxed. And it kind of overwhelmed me in a little bit of like, oh my gosh, if the wrong person walks into the room, like my cervix will shrivel up, shrink up. Like, no. But the positive side of that is like, if I can keep myself relaxed and calm and in a really positive state, like just that will help me so much. And I like remind Chris of all these things as I'm reading it. And it's just like good to talk about. So Ina May.
A lot of her stories do crack me up though, because it's kind of like this. It's kind of like, you know, things were not progressing and I could see the mother was struggling and we did this one thing to fix it and the baby came out a minute later. Like, you know, like that's a traumatization of it, but like, you know, I just, you know, I saw and we fixed. And then the woman did her thing in nature and it was beautiful.
And I like too that it's like more, it's more crunchy and more hippie and natural than I go, but it kind of gives me this range of what could be so that I feel more comfortable with what I'm comfortable with. I don't know, like, you know, in her stories, she'll have like, you know, the man come and do like nipple stimulation or like, you know, like really get the man involved here. And like, and I'm kind of like, all right, that's not my thing, but I do appreciate that this range is being explored and presented to me of like, you have more options available to you.
If I was going to do that, like during labor, the only other person I'd want in the room would be Ina May. I'd be like, she's cool. We can do this, babe.
Yeah. Maybe not.
Yeah, because we're pretty crunchy on the crunchy scale. It's a scale. I'm taking like chlorophyll right now and mushroom capsules. Like I'm always dabbling.
You're always dabbling in something.
But I'm always trying to for sure. So I consider myself more crunchy than you, but I'm like, Ina May is like, woo. She is on a different level. She's on the farm level. No, it's a good point though. I love hearing the reminders of the book because it has been so long for me of, that's where I learned about like the horse lips and keeping her sphincter law. Okay. So I started this book, the breastfeeding book, and I was like first like 3 or 4 chapters. And I was like, this lady is so unbelievably crunchy. I cannot even. And it's like not enough information still. Like I was still frustrated. And she says things that I do not like. She says things in a way that make me want to gag sometimes because they are so, I'll give some examples. They are just too raw for me. And then like I got in past like 4 or 5 and she is so much more down to earth and practical. Like even by the end of the book, she just gets overwhelmingly more understanding of like everyone's specific situation. So in the beginning, gag even seeing it, she says, if you intend to breastfeed and you decide to go ahead with circumcision of your newborn boy, I recommend you schedule it after your baby has experienced pleasure at your breast. I just don't like, so, like phrases like that gross me out. I'm sorry. I'll read them to Alex and he's like, because babies, it's a pleasurable experience for babies. They're getting fed. Like, what's wrong? I'm like, I just don't want it phrased that way. I just don't. I'm sorry. And I know we've talked about circumcision before. She does say, like, her point with circumcision that she just wants to make is, like, hey, like, a lot of people don't circumcise nowadays. And, like, you do have an option. And just, like, take some time to explore your options. Like, she's not trying to push an agenda on anyone. Okay, over here she says, will you feel an impulse to nuzzle, kiss, or lick your newborn baby? I hope so. And if you do, I invite you to surrender to it. Like, this is what I'm talking about, where you're like, why would you say, I don't, Alex was like, I've never had a desire to lick a baby, but okay, I can see how someone would. In the funny ones first, but one thing that was really a good reminder for me is this whole, I'm going to show you this picture.
I see a large breast.
How's that?
I can't really tell where the baby is.
The mom has just given birth, so she's laying on her back now. Yeah, so she's topless and baby is naked except for hat. And so mom is like laying almost flat. Basically how this is very good for babies to nurse this way when you're on your back. And that like grab, like you would never drink this way out of a cup. You would never like drink from the ground up. But if you were drinking with a straw, that is how it would make sense. And that like gravity and breastfeeding like work differently than us drinking with cups. And actually, if the baby is like head down and you're lying flat, they actually have so much more control when they are drinking. They're not going to get like sprayed as much. They're not going to overeat as much and then choke and gag and all of that. And then it's like much more comfortable for the mother because she gets to lay down. It's much easier for the entire baby's like body to be laying on yours. I would do a diaper. I feel like this might be playing with trouble to have a completely naked baby on you, but to each his own. With my last birth, I was already dealing with my poop on the table. So I don't need more poop on the table. But I loved this picture. This was like the first picture in the book that really struck to me of like, oh my gosh, this is such a beautiful picture. Yeah, you see like one breast exposed and then the baby suckling the other breast. And it was so beautiful. And I even like showed Paul and Cecilia because I was reading it while they were playing. I was like, oh, come look, because they've had some questions and they looked at it and it's like beautiful and it's natural. I don't think it's inappropriate at all. And they were like, oh, cool. And like went back to playing. Like it was totally a normal thing. I'm like, yeah, they're going to see my boobs. They're going to see breastfeeding. They're going to want to know more about it. So there were a lot of good pictures in here that I got to show them. So yeah, she shows like good sideline positions, which I've never really been able to accomplish super comfortably for a long period of time. I feel like you're pretty good at that.
Yeah.
I would like to do more of the sideline position.
As you're holding the book, I'm like, okay, yeah, I think your book is bigger than the childbirth book. Like,
oh, you're right.
There is a lot to say about breastfeeding.
Well, and then Shayla just loaned me a book. It's like a La Leche League book. Mm-hmm. And it reads more like a textbook. It does have a few stories in it, but they're much shorter. And it's much easier to navigate and problem solve things. But it's even bigger than this book.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, there is so much. Yeah, this book is like 300 pages long. But this is great. She says, signs of a good latch. You'll hear babies swallowing. You'll see the movement between the temple and the ear. You hear no clicking or smacking sounds. Your breast is greatly softened after the baby feeds there. And your baby seems relaxed when he's feeding. And like, that's just like super helpful for me as someone who like, I just haven't breastfed in a few years. You know, my oldest just turned 7 and this is like, yeah, it's been 3 years since I've breastfed.
Have you had help from nurses in the hospital? Like there's lactation people, right?
I feel like every encounter I've had with a lactation consultant has been so aggressive.
Oh,
I feel like every time, because yes, absolutely. And after I had Clara, I went to like breastfeeding like class, mm-hmm. center, whatever, yeah, yeah. group kind of thing. Just because I was like meeting my cousin there who was like also breastfeeding her first newborn. And I didn't feel like I had any problems. I was like, oh, I'm just going to like go hang out with other moms, see my cousin. And then like I went and the lady was like trying to fix me. And I was like, oh, no, I don't have a problem. I'm just here. And then she was like, commenting and critiquing my nipple size and shape. And I was like, I am not about this. I am very tired now. Yeah. This has been an exhausting experience.
That's no good.
But like everyone talks about like, yeah, get a lactation consultant, go to the Lily Leche groups. And like people have tons of good experiences. I just keep getting, I don't know, maybe I'm just like really defensive. And I think I didn't understand. When I think back to being in the hospital after having Clara my first, the nurse kept like trying to get me to wake her up to feed her. And I was like, why? Like, let her sleep. But I do think I didn't understand the importance that sometimes you do have to do that. It has been a few hours, or they're only like sucking a little bit and then falling back to sleep. Like, I don't know. It's a balance. After reading this, I'm like, okay, it's a balance between like trusting your gut and trying to like offer the breast as often as possible. But really, I think the most important thing is just like having your baby on you skin to skin for like as much as possible for like, you know,
yeah,
2 to 7 days. That seems to be just like the consensus. But no, I just feel like the lactation consultants that I've met with at the hospital have just been kind of like big Dutch women who like hand express on my boob. And I'm like, I don't know what's happening. Like, this is too much. Like, I want someone who's like soft and gentle, yeah, and gonna come in. Like, I need a vibe, and I've never encountered that vibe.
Yeah, I had someone help me after Avenge, and she was soft and gentle. But she kind of, my memory is she kept kind of offering different positions to try that I was kind of like, okay. And then I was always sort of like, am I doing this right? Like, But then it was fine. You know, my problem is always the milk taking so long to come in. How long? So maybe that's what I want to Google. And or does she say anything about that? Like,
how long?
Well, with John, it was like day 5. The milk still hadn't really come in and I was freaking out. And just like hormones were going crazy and I was so emotional. And
oh, I remember this now. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's like cluster feeding like crazy because there's really milk. And I'm just like, why is this? Like everything worked so well up until this gap. Like, why did my body not just produce the milk when the baby's here? Mm. And I think that kind of happened with Evange too. Because her birth weight dropped a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. And so we went in to like do like the weighing feed to see how much she was getting. But all of that just stressed me out. And I feel like a stressed, exhausted postpartum mom is like the worst. You know, like anything to just like give you peace of mind and give you rest. And then you can better care for your baby.
She's not here with us, but if Ina May was here, I think what she would say is that you should start hand expressing like a week before you think you're going to deliver and keep your stress down and just like, keep like you said,
stress down
and keep baby on you as much as possible, that like as much as baby can like be on you. Yeah.
Yeah. Hand expressing. Yeah. I've never done that. I think I should try that. Yeah. Be like, get ready, boobs.
Yeah.
be ready.
One interesting thing I did hear in one of the breastfeeding podcasts that I was listening to was, you know, when breastfeeding pumps became available through insurance, that it became a thing the hospital tried to push on everyone. And I remember like my sister just gave me her old breastfeeding pump and I was in the hospital and they were like, oh, like, you know, insurance, breastfeeding pump. And I was like, oh no, I already have one. And they're like, well, why don't you take this one also? I was like, no. And they really tried to push it on me. Like, just take it in case you need it. And obviously now I'm like, oh, it's because for everyone they get, like they get paid more.
With the code LASTINLITTLES10, you can get 10% off your entire order at chooselife.com.
I did not know they sold baby shoes. Did you know that?
Yes.
Okay. They're so cute. Emmaus crib shoe, little leather baby shoes in 6 different designs and colors. One is white for baptism.
Oh,
they go from 0 to 3 months to like, you know, the biggest size is like 36 months. So, and they're just adorable.
With the code LASTINLITTLES10, you can get 10% off your entire order at chooselife.com.
Like, it's good that people who want breastfeeding pumps and need breastfeeding pumps can get them through insurance for free, but not everyone needs one. And not everyone wants one and not everyone like has to have one. You know, I did go back to work after my first. And so, especially when you're going back to work, you have that anxiety as a mom of like, I got to make sure I pump enough. I got to make sure I like that baby can take a bottle. You hear all these horror stories of like baby was 3 months old and now they won't take a bottle. So I was like, we got to start at 6 weeks so that like she can learn how to do this, because I'm not going to be here, you know, when she's, I left when she was 4 months old. And then I did that with the other two as well, because I wanted to be able to have the ability to go to like a dentist appointment if I needed to. Or, you know, it's not like I was leaving all the time, but I think I had an over fear of if I'm not here, like this baby can't eat. And I'm planning on doing a lot less pumping and bottles than I have done in the past. I think with Cecilia, we started doing, I don't know, like a few a week, like not much, but I was telling Alex, like, I see you and Shaylin, like neither of you, especially with the last few kids, like have had any problems really that I've seen. It just seems to like have come so naturally, breastfeeding, and like just be a joyful and very easy thing. I'm sure like painful in the first like 2 weeks and like, yeah, like road bumps. But I was like, I think there's really something to this, like not pumping when your supply and demand is just like so much more evened out. So I feel a lot less stressed and motivated to not pump, like, because I don't have to, like, I'm not going back to work. I'm not going to be leaving. Like, I can, my life is going to be a little bit more at home now, and like with summer and we're not traveling. And yeah, learning that like breastfeed, like pumping can aggravate your nipples in like a whole different way. Like, I swear, I'm telling you, I'm still learning things and I'm enjoying.
Yeah, no, I mean, you've already convinced me. Now I'm like, yeah, I want this book. I want to look at this book, and it's good for me to think about. Yeah, I gave up, or I just kind of realized like, I don't actually need to pump at all. It just was like, this doesn't fit my life. And I never actually get babies to take bottles. I think at Kiara, I was like, I'm just letting it go. Like, I'm not even going to try to pull out the pump and pretend. But one thing I probably won't even do it still, but I just didn't know about those cups that you can just sleep with that catch like the extra milk that leaks. The haka. So I might try that this time. Like, the idea of having milk in the freezer is sort of interesting to me. But then it's like, well, would the baby actually even drink it? But it's like, well, if the baby was really, 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 really hungry, it probably would. So who knows?
Everyone in the breastfeeding community, I've now learned, says hakas are cool, but they'll always say, and I have a haka and I love it, but they will always say, like, be careful, because it still does provide like nipple stimulation and can then like cause you to overflow and then, like, increase your supply too much. And everyone kind of agrees that like really supply like should not be an issue. Like, babies get as much as they need. And the stress I think that moms have over supply is like a very strong stress. The rule that I was reading about was like 1 ounce per hour approximately for the first 6 months of baby's life. And that's also because like your milk changes over the first 6 months. I'm like, oh yeah, like that's interesting. After 6 months, it's like a different story. But yeah, that like oversupply doesn't really mean like you're abounding in extra and extra excess, but that it's just like a little bit more than baby needs. Undersupply is like a little bit less. Like just that usually if you are breastfeeding and not pumping a ton and you have like, and you're healthy and you're, you know, just like living a good, healthy life, that like you should be fine. And this is like what everyone is saying on these podcasts and in this book of just like, yeah, don't worry about it. So it's comforting to me.
Yeah. I did notice a big, like, I only kind of leaked and dealt with, the leaking with Evangeline. And with after Evangeline, it was like things normalized to baby almost immediately. And I didn't have super full or like exploding feelings. It was just kind of like, I'm like, it was interesting how my body like adjusted with a second, third, fourth baby.
Yeah. Okay. So this is where Ina Mae gets fun and spicy. she says, your sex life. Several factors are likely to affect your sex life during the first few months. You know, she says like personality needs of your baby, your birth experience, the number of older children you have, whether you're returning to work, your partner's needs. Like, she's with it. She's not so hippy dippy that she doesn't understand like what's going on. But I thought this was really interesting because you know, everyone will tell you rest, rest, rest. And I just did like the midwife course, beautiful midwifery. They had like a one-time free course on like postpartum, and they talk about the 5-5-5 rule. They say like 5 days in bed, 5 days around the bed, and 5 days at home. Don't go out for a while, you know, like rest more, I think is like almost to the point of you get stressed of like, oh my gosh, like what if I can't rest more? It's, and then I'm not going to get enough rest. And we all, you know, worry about that. I was crying to you this week that I missed a nap and now my whole day is ruined, which is a real struggle. But anyway, so as much as Ina May is all about rest, I thought this was fascinating. She says, I recommend waiting until you have no more bleeding or discharge before you resume lovemaking that involves penetration. In most women, this process takes about 3 weeks. Waiting 3 or 4 weeks until the uterus is well closed protects you from infection. And I was just like, whoa, that's very different from the like 6 week doctor rule. And everyone's different. And like, I'm certainly not going to tell anyone when they should go back to having sex. But I know you and I don't quite follow the 6 week rule. And one time I made the mistake, though. I remember with Cecilia at 4 weeks, we did like a Wednesday and a Thursday. And I was like, Thursday was too much. I now realize. But I was like, oh, yeah, like, thanks, Ina. Like, yeah, listen to my body. It's not about a numbers rule.
Yeah.
I skipped the chapters, of course, on like weaning and twins. Chapter 15 is nipplophobia, what it is and why we should eradicate it.
Like society and nipples?
Yeah.
Not baby and nipples.
Your sexuality is good, holy, and beautiful. If that doesn't feel true, you're in the right place. We believe Jesus knows your sexual brokenness and is inviting you to wholeness. We hope to bring you that invitation every week as we explore topics from friendship to fantasy, loneliness to lust, and more. We are dedicated to helping you connect your struggle to your story and your story to God, because every bit of you is sacred by design.
Are we making up words? It feels like that. And then she has two beautiful pictures in here of Madonna and Jesus, and like Mary with one full boob out and Jesus still like looking around. I'm like, oh, how pretty. So yeah, that was it.
Cool.
It says Ina May's Guide to Childbirth and Spiritual Midwifery is her other book.
Yes, I have not read that one.
Oh, Spiritual Midwifery is the third book.
Yeah, it's a different book.
Oh my.
Yeah. Because mine says author of Spiritual Midwifery.
Tell me what you picture when you picture the farm that she has all these women giving birth on.
Yeah, I just picture like different little cabins on like a mountainside and people just living and having babies. I mean, where I grew up in Northern California, there were like, I knew there were friends of mine in my middle school, high school, who had grown up on like a commune up in the hills. Like there were still pockets of little very hippie culture. So it feels not too foreign to me.
Yeah. Oh, how funny. So yeah, we recommend, right?
Yes. I definitely recommend The Guide to Childbirth.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the breastfeeding one sounds great too.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely in the vein though of like lots and lots of stories too. And the stories are a little bit longer than just like a standard, maybe like how-to breastfeeding book. Oh, I can't find it, but there was one really funny story in here about this single mom which like that part's sad. And she was, you know, taking care of her newborn on her own. She was, you know, just so exhausted. And, you know, I can't imagine, because you and I have both been able to like, please take the baby to our husbands. And so she was past the point of exhaustion and she's trying to nurse the baby one night and he's screaming and screaming. She can't figure out what's going on. And she finally turns the light on a little bit because she like had been trying to just nurse in the dark because it's the middle of the night. And she realized that she had picked the baby up by its legs and was trying to nurse its butt because
she was because she was so tired.
You know, she was crying and the baby was scared. And then, she got a good laugh. She fixed it and he was fine. And it like broke the tension of her situation. She's like, okay, I need help. I need to call on a friend. I mean, can you imagine like the things you do when you're so sleep deprived? And you're just like,
oh, man.
Imagine, like, take it, just take the boom.
Yes.
Oh, goodness.
But I like, I feel like it seems like this book set you up to be like, okay, I have confidence in like my body and baby and the connection and like the way this is meant to work. And if I can just live my life and trust that process, this will be great. And it reminded me of the really great short little podcast that you sent me where she's giving those 5 practical tips for basically postpartum recovery.
Oh, Jaquith Sterling. Yes.
Isn't it Sterling Jaquith?
Sterling.
Yeah.
Probably. Sorry.
But she made a comment of like, I have a thing where I just know I'm going to say no to everything mm-hmm. for the first 30 days because I've had trouble breastfeeding in the past. And I just really want to take mm-hmm. that time to rest and be with baby and focus on this. Yeah. And I was like, that's so wise. Like, you know yourself.
Yeah, that was great. We'll post to that. It was so great. It was like an 8-minute podcast, like 8 points of like set my bar.
I think it was 5. It was like 5 great short.
Oh, was it? Yeah, you know, so good.
It was great. It was gold.
She said that she misses mass for 2 weeks. And I was like, that's good. I think I've only ever missed 1. And I think 2 is a good idea. I think with that, if you're going to do that, you just have to say like, I'm not going to go anywhere else. You know, because if you're going anywhere else, you have the energy to go to mass. Like mass should be the first thing we're getting back to. Even if that means like you're going by yourself with baby to like 5 p.m. mass and your husband's taking like the other kids, like that's fine too. But I was like, yeah, 2 weeks. I think I'm going to do that. Thank you.
All right, cool. Do you follow Meghan Trainor at all?
No.
So do you, I mean, like, you know who she is.
The pop singer?
Yeah. She married the redheaded boy from Spy Kids a few years ago.
Okay.
He's a man now, so he's not a boy anymore. And they have their son just turned 2 in the last few months. And she is the cutest. I'm a little bit obsessed with her right now. I think she is just fantastic. So she, in December, they posted a video about how we like either very publicly about how they were like they it was like in a song about how they were pregnant or wanting to get pregnant or trying to get pregnant again, which I was like, oh my gosh, like you never hear people say that publicly, you know. And now she's like 22 weeks pregnant with her second, and her son, you know, just turned 2. And I've heard her say like she would really like to have 4 kids. It's so unusual for kind of like Hollywood. And she wrote a book about like pregnancy and motherhood because she felt really alone during her first pregnancy because it was like during COVID and none of her friends were pregnant. And it's like so sweet. And she just put out this song recently called I Am Your Mother. She talks about, she says she wrote the song to kind of like talk back to all the men and producers and in her life who were telling her that having a baby is going to destroy her career and like she needs to write songs like not about babies or children or like all this stuff. And it's so cute. And she just like owns this like motherhood and family life. And I just love it. I'm just like all about that right now.
I will have to look this up now.
Look up that song. It's super, I mean, don't listen to it with kids around, but it's like, it's just super cute and it gets stuck in your head and it's adorable. Yeah.
Fun.
I also wanted to tell you about like a few years ago before Clara was in kindergarten, when I had like more time at home with everyone, we would read like the daily mass readings, the prayers and blah, blah, blah. But now that we just like have breakfast in the morning and then take her to school, I have started realizing like, wow, I don't have any like prayer time in the morning with the kids. Like I have my prayer time, but like, what can I do? What can I do that's really short? And I thought about this for a long time, and I looked very specifically. I was like, I want a prayer, and I want something that's daily and like a calendar, but very short and like somewhat liturgically based, but not something that I have to buy a new one of every mm-hmm. year. And so I bought this book. Well, I'll link to it, but it's called Every Day is a Gift. And so it has dates on it. And some of them have lined up like with feast days, but it's literally like a one sentence or two sentence verse from the Bible, a one or two sentence quote from a saint, and one or two sentence of a prayer. And they all have to do with the, like the same topic. Like they're all about temperance, or they're all about surrendering your life to the Lord, or all about like why it's good to have spiritual direction, something like that. Like they all pertain to each other. It's just beautifully put together. It takes like 60 seconds to read it and pray it with my kids every morning at breakfast. And I just feel so much better of like, we're starting the day with a prayer together, something from the Bible. Like it's just, it's everything I could have wanted for this season of life that I'm in, where we just have a quick breakfast together.
That's cool. I'm intrigued by that because
yeah,
I've been praying with John before our different like breakfasts and lunch.
Yeah.
But that morning rush with all the kids, we're not praying. So yeah.
Right, right. Well, even like praying before meals with the kids is like, they're like, bless the Lord, this is better, serve better, thanks, amen.
Yeah. But it's cute because John has been really into praying. So he sits down and then he goes, I want to pray, and folds his hands and like looks at me and starts singing in his mumbled way our Bless Us, O Lord tune.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really cute. One of the biggest words is from thy bounty.
So sweet. Okay, so where did you get to on the Chosen season 3?
Oh,
are you anywhere? They get long.
I watched the episode that you really liked where they drive him out of his hometown, and I really liked that one also. Because of that little glimpse of Lazarus and Mary and Martha in that episode, it made me think about the Lazarus story, the gospel reading the other Sunday in a different way of just like imagining that friendship. Yeah, that was just cool to have that kind of brought to life in a different way. That may have been as far as we got, or maybe we started the next one, but I can't quite remember. Yeah.
Well, it's all very good. I have like the same review as always, that it's like worth seeing, doesn't need to be oversold, but that like their portrayal of Jesus is always really wonderful and beautiful. But I did, you know, I talked last time or whatever about how I like skipped through catechism in a year, sometimes of the commentary, and I skipped through a lot of the Chosen as well. This is just me. This is what I do. And Alex is fine with it, but he'd always be like, what are you doing? Like he would never, I watch normal movies. I will watch, especially if it's a movie I've seen before, beginning of the movie, and then I'll skip a good chunk of the middle and go to the end. I'm like, the beginning and the end are really the best part of the movie. Like, I don't need the middle. Like, I don't have time to watch this whole thing. I'm a skipper.
So it was like all the disciples backstory stuff.
So when it gets really into, yeah, like really into like Mary Magdalene's like side stories that are just, I'm like, I'm bored. Like
I was not as into the women. Like I still like Mary Magdalene, but those other two women, I was just like, what are these scenes? What is the point of this back and forth here?
Okay. I feel better. I felt bad. I still did it. I'm like, I get to the Jesus part. I just want more of the Jesus. But okay, so a little bit of a spoiler, but the finale was insanely good. It's just Jesus walking on the water to Peter and Peter, and it is done so well. If like you get to a point in life where you're like, I'm not going to finish this,
just
go and watch that episode, or just go and watch that. Cause like, you know how the gospels go, like it's okay to watch them out of order, but it's so good because they do build up this story with Peter, where Peter at this point is then, which this is all just, you know, speculation, really angry at Jesus. And he's very frustrated at Jesus. He's at this point in his life where he's seeing the sacrifices that he's having to make for following Jesus in his personal, you know, life. And he's seen Jesus ministering to the Gentiles. And Peter very much feels in this, you know, in just the chosen, that like he feels neglected. You know, Jesus says something about like, you know, have faith. And he's like, faith is not my problem. Like, I have enough faith. I need more support and more direction. Like, tell me this is where I'm supposed to go and I'll do it. But it's so, you know, it's just, you know, the chosen speculation that Peter was angry at that point and comes out. But it was like, oh yeah, like, why did Peter get out of the boat? to me, it's obvious, like, okay, he's obviously the leader of the apostles. And I think the chosen does a really good job of making that very clear that he is the leader, which I'm like, I love that, because we know this is our first pope. This is the rock. And so I like that they really acknowledge that. And maybe the disciples were like questioning, like, is it a ghost? Is it Jesus? And he wanted to show them, hey, no, it is Jesus. I'm going to show you. Or maybe he was kind of like testing his faith of like, this either needs to be God or I'm going to die. And like, either way, I need to move forward. Like, you know, yeah. We will never know this side of heaven, but like, oh, another good question to ask Jesus or Peter in heaven. but it was a very good scene, and it was very applicable with where Alex is with his career right now, where he was very moved by that scene of like, I have faith, Lord. And like, I know what you've called me to, but this is really hard and I see lots of waves. I have the will. I have the faith. I need you to come meet me. and he is. He's like slowly giving us more more help along the way as his career is moving forward very slowly, which is fine with me. But yeah, it's helpful to have affirmation from outside sources for him. So
that makes me want to keep watching, because I love that. I love that scene.
And just feel empowered to skip through the scenes you don't want to see.
Yes, I should. Yeah.
There are just a lot of random, like, I don't know. They're fine. They're fine. I just don't want to.
Yeah. No, but yeah. In that episode that's more on my mind with them driving about, you know, a prophet's not welcome in his hometown.
Yeah.
That sense of like, my time has not yet come, but like now it's starting to come. Like, we're getting closer to that point. And the like, seeing Mary kind of grapple with that of like, oh, yeah. Okay, this is happening now, or like, it's going to happen soon.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of like, you know, that's cool to reflect on during Lent too, of like, we're building up to this, and the human side of it, of the like anxiety and the dread and the like, oh man, this is gonna shake a lot of things really soon.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm having a really good Lent as far as suffering enough because of my current state of pregnancy. And I'm like, at this point, I'm like, what am I giving? I'm not giving anything extra up. I'm not fasting. I'm at the point where I'm like, I am so done with this pregnancy. I'm having all the symptoms. I did like was doing an exercise video and squatting the other day, which is great. And then I had that point where I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like there's air going up me as I squat now. That's how loose I am. And I was like, I remember this feeling. Do you know what I'm saying? Do you get that?
I don't remember.
No, and I have like, I don't know, there's probably like a technical term for it, but I have like loose lip vagina syndrome, whatever. Like, I'm just like I go pee and I push down my pants and like my underwear is like sticking to me because I'm like so damp all the time apparently, or something, and just like fluids moving around. But then it also, because my vagina is so loose now, it's like peeling off in the weirdest, most uncomfortable way ever, and I just have to pee all day long. So I'm just like, what a great Lent. I just have all this natural suffering. I don't even have to look for
it. So much to offer up.
I'm like 3 weeks out. It's going to happen. You know, just having lots of Braxton Hicks all the time. Every time I lay down, it's a whole process. So yeah, it's a good, no, I'm being serious. I'm not being serious. If anyone thinks I sound sarcastic, I'm like, it's built in. And at least it's during Lent. I don't have to like do Lent and do all this. What if I had all this right after Lent? I mean, how bad terrible would that be? I'm going to like do this, have Easter, and then have this like beautiful, sunny postpartum time where everything's going to go great.
Yes. Yes.
I do this though where I was reflecting on this today. I was like, is this self-sabotage where I wait until the last minute to like write out notes for other people who are going to help take care of life? And I remember when I was about to have Clara, like really waiting to the last minute to write my plans for like my substitute teacher. And then I started having nightmares about like going into labor early, which are just as extensive as the plans that I'm like trying to write out for my mom and Alex to help run the house with, and like what the kids' routines and things are. Cause they don't know. Cause like, that's my card. That's my job. He knows a lot, but he wants to see it in written writing too. So yeah. So I texted you today that I started writing out like our more of the specifics of our routines and things. And I don't like doing it though. It's like took a lot of mental energy for me to do that. And I procrastinated a lot over it over the last 3 days.
It's like that final nesting, like this really is going to happen soon. I like really have to do this.
Yeah. I always think of nesting sounding fun though. That sounds like a blech. And I'm really good because I always get like baby stuff out and ready and set up way before most people do, I think. And I think because I know for me that there's so much to do to get ready and I like to space it out. There's a lot of reasons. But yeah, we've got like all the room stuff set up. But now I'm like, oh, okay. Now we are finishing our taxes. Okay, good. That's done. Now I can write these notes. Like these are now the boring things. But that's okay. Because also things change so much, like with like the kids' routine and what they want. You know, like one day it's like nobody likes peanut butter anymore. And it's like, when did that happen?
Yeah. I wrote these notes, you know, 4 months ago, and now I'd have to rewrite them. So it's good. It's good that you're waiting till now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's why. yes. But did you want to say anything about your current bedtime routine, or did you want to talk about that, or should we just skip it?
I can if you want to.
I am curious. Tell me, like, what is your current bedtime routine right now with 4 kids and in 2 bedrooms? And like, how do you guys pull that off?
Yeah. So it's like 6:45-ish. We go upstairs and we brush teeth, and it's still kind of one person doing the teeth brushing. Mm-hmm. So really it's like Chris goes upstairs and starts brushing everyone's teeth, and I like am doing dishes cleanup, and then I'll head up when I'm done, or when I hear like John being crazy, you know, when I'm like, okay, someone needs to put John to bed. So I'll go up and be like, Chris, can you put John to bed? And I'll start reading to the girls, or it's kind of like, get your teeth brushed so we can read. Once everyone's brushed, then we can start reading. That's the, or you can feed the fish.
I forgot you have a fish.
Yeah. Right. It's the tank looks terrible right now. We don't really know why. But they haven't died. I mean, some have died, but this current batch has not died, but the water looks terrible.
Aren't you supposed to clean the tank?
Yeah. Okay. So Chris is in charge of the fish.
Okay.
He's been changing the water, and we have a changing the filters and doing everything we were always doing, but for whatever reason, something happened and now it's very murky and it's not changing. But the fish also are fine with it. So it's weird. So John goes to bed like 7:15, 7:30. And the girls are being read to. They go to bed anywhere from like 7:40 to 8:15. Just kind of like how the night goes. And
yeah.
And Evangeline reads in her bed. So well, I mean, it depends. Sometimes she's tired and she goes to bed right when they do. And sometimes she stays up later reading.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when Chris is gone, I am able to do all of that myself. And I just have it's like the girls know I'm putting John to bed now. Just like be in your room reading or playing or whatever while I'm doing this. And then I come and finish up the reading, singing.
And the three that are in one room range from
7 to 6, basically, and 3.5.
Yeah.
I think it's helped. Someone just asked on our listserv. They also have like a 7-year-old, 5-year-old, 2-year-old, 7-4, 2-year-old all in one room. And it's been crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really have any advice to, I was thinking of giving advice that like you do, because I feel like it depends so much on the, like I was reflecting, I was like, I think I'm lucky in that my oldest is not the one instigating playing or being silly. She's the one who's like crying that people are keeping her awake. But now that she can read, that changed things too.
That's us too though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the younger ones. And, but then it depends on like who's more tired, because sometimes someone will just conk out. And, and then also their dynamic is more like Zaylee being like, Kiara, get away from me. Like, don't come over to my bed.
Mm-hmm.
Stay in your bed. Don't come over here. So that kind of helps too in a weird way, but yeah.
It takes a lot. It's like the worst time of day, because we're at our worst. They're at their worst. And like everyone's tired. It's just like, and as the parent, you have to work so hard to be like the reasonable one. And like our kids like almost like they have to poop at like 1 minute before it's bedtime. And they literally will go and poop. And I'm like, did you do that on purpose? And
well, and daylight savings, you have it so rough in South Bend because you're right at the edge.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get dark till like 9.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And we prepared for daylight savings so well. And I think that's why I was so mad when they didn't adjust more quickly, because they adjusted really well for like 3 days. And then all of a sudden it stopped, which I'm like, I'm preaching to myself. Like, I know it takes 2 weeks for your body to adjust, but it's still, yeah, I'm just like, I am exhausted. But Alex does do most of it. And he's great.
Oh. Yeah, springtime, it's hard to rope them in. We had that tonight too.
Yeah.
Everyone's out playing soccer in the backyard. And I was like, bedtime.
Yeah. And they're so happy.
Like, this is so nice.
It's so hard. Yeah. But we always pay for it later.
Can you tell me something that made you laugh this week?
Well, today I was looking through like pictures with Paul after his cozy time. We were just like looking through pictures, and he is so funny. We're on like a wait list for an occupational therapist. He has like 7 sessions that he was referred for, because he has sensory sensitivity stuff for sure, which we've known for a long time. And he's like really into clothes. Like, he's really into his clothes. He goes very excited. Yesterday, you would have thought it was Christmas at our house, because he gave me 5 long sleeve t-shirts and I gave him 5 short t-shirts, which like, I don't know, I should have just done them all. There's no way he's going to wear a long sleeve shirt again for the next 7 months. Like, and then the girls wanted theirs, and I was like, yeah, we'll be fair. But anyway, going through these photos with him was so funny, because we look at these memories and all these things we've done, and he talks about his clothes so much. He's like, I'm wearing shorts there. I'm wearing a t-shirt. Got my dinosaur t-shirt. Do I have that shark t-shirt still? Do you have that saved in the summer box? I like that t-shirt. I don't have that one anymore. Like, he remembers. He's like, I don't remember that. What am I wearing? Like, it's he's like a 5-year-old, but you just like would not think. He like asked, and I'm like, did you save that for Cece? Save that for Dominic? Does that fit me anymore? Can I have that one back? I really like that one. Why am I wearing long sleeves here? Why? And like this one picture, he was wearing like one of Clara's pink jackets. He's like, why am I wearing a Minnie Mouse jacket? And I said, you begged me to wear it that day. Why? That's weird. Why am I wearing socks? Like, he's anyway, like, it's just so funny. Like, you would not imagine, but everyone's so different. And he's so into his clothes. It tickled me.
That is really funny. We hope you have a great week with lots of laughs with your littles.